You're listening to Around Comics, episode 198. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. And lots of people did. We have like half of Chicago here tonight.
This is weird.
Let them hear you. All right.
Race through.
Hey, everybody. I'm Christopher Niesman. Tom Caters is not with us this week, but have no fear. We have a fantastic panel lined up for you. Let's get everybody introduced here. First of all, he is the creative force behind such titles as Loaded Bible, Jesus vs. Vampires, and the soon-to-be major motion picture Hackslash.
Nice.
He is
wow.
Mr. Tim Seeley.
Hello, hello. Thanks for that. That was epic.
You like that?
Yeah, that was nice.
I need like thundering music in the
background. Just whining in the corner.
Dun, 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 dun. Next, a return guest who you may remember from our episode on video games. He is Mr. Adam Swank.
Hey, guys. What's up? It's me here.
Good to have you here. Good to see you again. You hung around Chicago even after the EA Chicago fallout.
Yeah, the implosion. Yeah, I did. I love the city, so I decided I would make it work out here and have. So
we can respect that. Awesome. Next is yet another return guest to the show. You may remember she and Len Cody here a couple months ago talking about their web comic Chicago 1968, among other projects. She is Miss Jenny Frizen.
Hello.
Woo.
Oh, yay! What do you mean, yay?
Fresh from your drive up from Peoria.
Fresh from Peoria.
Yeah. Did you go into the old comic shop and give them the what for?
I didn't. I called, and yeah. They don't carry Voltron or Hex.
What?
Your store sucks butt. Tell that store they suck.
What is impossible, but I'm not going to say what the name of it is.
Okay. Do they still not sell to girls?
I didn't. Well, they didn't tell me yes or no on the phone.
Oh, okay. You need to put a mustache on and a top hat.
You had to.
I forgot my mustache tonight.
You got to stop from playing Magic the Gathering and dump it.
And our last guest is a man who has his roots in comics, but has funneled his talents into the video game industry. Currently working at Chicago's own Midway Games. He's Mr. Andrew Kadelka.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
Good. We've had you on a couple times.
Yeah.
You've bounced into the store on Free Comic Book Day.
Pretty much, yeah. I just kind of pass in and out, like the guy in the behind all
like
the famous
gas.
Pictures. Yeah, like
gas. Sorry.
The guy in the alley behind the Walgreens.
Right.
I'm pretty sure you said the guy in the behind.
The guy behind all the famous pictures.
Are you the man behind the
peeking
man?
Out behind from the behind.
The guy in the behind. Jenny, I know our next project.
Nice. Well, now's probably a good time to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering our Book of the Month selection, which I think we're just going to call that the Book Club selection, because we haven't been able to knock these out once a month. So our Book Club...
You can find enough comics you like every month?
Well, but you're reading these big tomes, and it's like every 6 weeks, so it's just our Book Club selection, which is Charles Burns' fantastic Black Hole.
Oh, I love Black Hole.
Absolutely, and you can pick that up right now, good sir, at InStock Trades for 35% off the cover price. The soft cover is available for $11.67, or the hardcover is a mere $16.22. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. So there you go. So
I kind of feel dumb about paying full price for my black hole.
I know. You should. Shop it in stock trades. Which I believe that we're going to be recording that episode next Friday. So
you're doing a black hole episode?
Yes, we're going to do a whole episode. You want to sit in on that one?
Yeah.
All right. Well, come by next Friday. It'll be you, me, and Tom.
Awesome.
So we'll be talking black hole. And then give you a little bit of a preview of what our next book of the month is. We're going to be checking out the True Story Swear to God Archives Volume 1. So
Does that have anything creepy in it?
Hmm?
Does that have anything creepy?
I don't think it's, well, marriage.
That's creepy as hell.
Okay. Love, romance.
You got me. That's worse than body dysmorphism.
Says the freshly engaged Tim Seeley.
Are you engaged, though?
Oh, I'm not supposed to know that.
No. Just don't say that I associated it with horrible things.
We have another engagement announcement, but I'll save that for whenever that person is here to talk about
it. Who is
it? I don't want to say.
Can you tell us off air?
I don't. Yes, I'll tell you off air.
Is it Scotty?
Well, you shouldn't make.
No.
It's Mike Norton. That's who it is.
It seems like
there
are tons of people getting engaged and getting married.
No, what do you do?
Can't say it on air.
All right. Well, this is usually the part of the program where we do our top of the stack. And I told you last time that we're retooling that a little bit and just going to talk about kind of whatever comics we've been reading and just kind of see where it goes. So anybody want to go first on something that they were really passionate about that they've read here in the last couple weeks?
It doesn't have to be from this pile here.
It does not have to be from the big mega pile of books that come up.
Go ahead, Jenny, because you raised your hand.
I am super psyched about House of Mystery.
Really?
I'm totally psyched about it.
It's such a good book.
I'm just psyched because I think it's hard to find like a venue where you can have changing and shifting artists and still have it not be just a strict anthology.
Sure.
And I'm really psyched that they managed to get not just an anthology as a throwback to the old House of Mystery, but also a continuing story. So it manages to get rid of the problems.
Did Ross Campbell do one of those, right? Ross Campbell drew the first.
Those are names. That sounds like a
legitimate
name.
Oh, names are weird to you, right?
Jill Thompson.
I don't remember.
Jill Thompson.
My own name. Jill Thompson did one. I remember that one.
Did you ever read The Dreaming back in the day? Uh-huh. Was it kind of sort of like in that vein where it's like
sort of. It has the same characters, and the idea is that these people are stuck in essentially a tavern inside of the House of Mystery.
Oh, okay. There was kind of a Sandman story, that remember that World's
it's
End?
Their characters, the House of Mystery was an original story, and then
Cain and Abel,
and then Neil Gaiman stole those characters with a seal. I don't mean like...
I believe he requested that he be able to use
it. It was an homage.
Sure. Hey, Al Moore
did not mean
too,
he stole. He swiped those characters and used those, the House of Mystery and the House of Secrets. But so now the story is that these characters are stuck in the House of Mystery Tavern, and to pay their tab or whatever, they tell a story, and that's what is the short story in each episode.
Oh, okay.
That has a shifting artist
a lot like
every time,
end.
And I think a different writer. I think it switches between
Matt Sturgis and Bill Willingham.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. Names are hard for me.
That's why I know names, but I don't read the books. But
but it's great because
you guys are good match. Each
and every issue is different because you have a totally different feel for whatever the story is in the middle. But there is that overlapping kind of mythos that they're building about.
And
the
I'm
House
a big
mystery.
Fan of sort of long building continuing stories. And I had read that I think Matthew Sturgis had said that they're going to have overlapping. He's like, I have kind of an entire plan for this whole book. He's like, it's not all written, but I've got a huge plan, and there's going to be overlapping mysteries. So just when another one's getting kind of wrapped up, we're going to have a couple more going, and eventually at the very end of the series, which we plan to be a long-running series, we'll have everything tied up at the end.
Oh, I can see this being an 80 issue.
Yeah.
Easy. Because what's brilliant about it is that with the stories that each person, and there are tons, you have no idea how big the cast of characters is yet, because people just kind of come in and out of the tavern, and so at some point in the night, it's story time, and that's the only currency people have is their stories. And so you get these great backstories of all of these different characters, which I'm sure is what will end up being tied into the over the overlapping art.
And you get your anthology one shot, so you're completely satisfied. And you still have an ongoing series, so you want to check out the next one.
And Sex with Giant Bugs.
That was the first
issue. Was that Ross Campbell? That was Ross Campbell.
That's
my favorite artist.
Sweet,
yeah.
The short story, I was like.
Well, what I think is funny is that you see a lot of the Vertigo titles these days, they kind of have been moving away from the sort of the fantasy element. And then you have a book like Castle Mysteries coming
Which is too bad that they move away from fantasy.
I know. It's well, and they're actually creating another imprint that's supposed to be all about crime, which is fine. But, like, I miss comics like Sandman and The Dreamy and, you know, Books of Magic and, you know, this House of Mystery. You know, I think that, you know, it would be a shame if they lost that sort of angle.
Agreed.
Well, I think the success of House of Mystery is going to make them rethink that because it is sold like hotcakes.
Really?
They keep doing reprintings of it. Mark can't keep it in the store. You can't even find one over there, and it's not because he doesn't order it. He keeps selling out. He can't keep it on the shelves right now.
Well, I'll pick it up the trade, so whatever.
Fantastic. Whatever. Yeah. And I'm mostly psyched that they finally found like a really solid venue by which to have a rotating cast of artists.
Yeah, that's a really
great
idea.
And have it make sense within the store, which I think is a hard thing.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one that, as the trade comes out, it's really going to pick up traction. I think people...
Right, like Preacher or Sandman.
Well, the first two issues sold out so fast that I think a lot of people just said, I'll just buy it in trade.
And the covers are great. I'm just going to add that in.
Is James Jean?
James Jean might be doing those, I think.
I don't
think it was James Jean.
No? Who was it?
Because he's all orange and blue, and this was looked like it was... it's kind of how he draws it.
It's painted.
It seemed like it was
a different
thing.
But I'm not sure it's James Jean.
It had that creepy, the eyes that were like bugs.
Yeah.
Whoever, they're gorgeous.
That freaked my gear out, man. Yeah, that was weird.
Gorgeous cover.
The story was you would love that story, too.
Sex with Bugs is like right up my alley, so...
It might actually get me to crack open that Sandman... Absolute Edition that's been staring at me on my bookshelf for the last year. I've started it probably 15 times.
Is it the first volume, or is it...
The first volume is weird because it's kind of tied
to superhero
stuff,
though, right?
It's got Martian Manhunter in it. But it gets way, way...
I'm getting like the stink eye from Adam.
Sandman is amazing. Once you get past... Like, the first... You know, it's funny because the first volume, like, the first, like, say, 10 or 15... The first, you know...
Year and a half worth of...
Maybe.
Issues,
but like it's like it's kind of Neil trying to find his footing and trying to find like
and
okay what are these
they
characters
kind of wanted
about?
To be in the DCU and shit.
Yeah,
like,
and they were very more horror driven, and then he kind of like again he kind of moves more into sort of this fantastical sort of realm, and then
well,
he starts adding
Corey Amos fantasy.
Yeah, and then he starts adding in like all these influences from other
really
mythologies
at adding in illusions.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And then what I really loved it was when I was able to get the annotations online and start reading like what is he talking about here, what does this mean? And there's this whole other level of depth to the comic that a casual or even an experienced comic reader would never know if they aren't incredibly well read, which I'm not. So
and that's another thing that I think House Mysteries is trying to do. I think they're trying to incorporate a lot of allusions to classical literature and music and art and stuff like that. But it's all stuff that it just makes it more rich if you understand, and if you don't, you're perfectly content to have the story that makes sense.
One of Neil Gaiman's old resources just finding really obscure books of just stories people never heard of, and just you don't even have dates on them. They're just
he did a lot of that.
He would love finding books like that just to write these weird stories about fairies and tales and whatever, just whatever he finds in these bookshops.
Fairies and tales and fairy tales.
And exactly, nice combination.
And then try to connect it all. That was the cool thing. He would connect it all to like what you know. All these myths come from something, and the
drugs,
the family,
largely.
You know, the dream and death and desire and all them, it all comes from them, which
well,
is
as,
really
as
cool.
Soon as I get through, it's on the list, as soon as I get through the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, then I'll move on.
Why
to
you hate Don Alan Moore?
No, that's what I'm reading right now. It's just those are kind of like Gaiman. They're so dense.
Did you read all the Swamp Things?
Not all of. I read the first three volumes, the first three trade paperbacks, but now they're coming out with the hardcovers, and so I'm waiting.
Right.
I'm getting there. I've read my fair share of Alan Moore.
Right.
Get off my back, Seeley. Who would like to go next?
Oh, I got it. I had a Phil Hester week. Phil Hester Palooza.
I like Phil Hester.
He came with Golly, number one, mm-hmm. and Fire Breather, number two, in the same week. And they were both the best reads I had this week, actually.
Nice.
Golly, totally creative idea. It's basically a carny sort of guy who's both amusement park ride repairman and a demolition car driver. Gets chosen by an angel to be the one to catch these angels, or these demons that have slipped out. But he's just kind of a, like, he's like a big old chaw-chewing sort of idiot.
So it's like Ghost Rider meets My Name is Earl?
Yo, God, that's great. But the idea is, he says, well, he asked the angel at some point, which is, why would you pick me? That you could, why don't you pick, like, you know, somebody really smart? And the angel says, well, compared to us, you're all pretty much the same. So it's like an idiot being chosen to think totally creative, really funny. And then, you know, Firebreather continues to be kind of what I always sort of liked about Spider-Man, you know, action, teen angst, and sort of that outcast thing, but done better than some current incarnations.
Sure.
Of character.
Andy Kuhn art on that.
Love Andy Kuhn, can do no wrong.
He
draws some crazy knuckles. Love
and just
Andy
an all-around nice guy too.
Love the Kuhn. Love the Kuhn. In fact, his birthday was a couple weekends about a week ago, which makes him, I think, 72.
Oh,
so yeah.
Happy birthday, Andy.
Andy Kuhn, yeah. But yeah, it was the, you know, the Hester double slam.
Nice.
You can't beat the Hester. And you know, he's the only... He made me like the darkness, which I didn't think would be done. And this darkness book is fantastic. So, Phil Hester's the stuff.
I like Phil, but unfortunately I have to inform him that I'm going to whip his ass in fantasy football this year.
Oh, you guys in a league together?
Apparently, that's what I hear.
Apparently. So. You're like, I'm not, so sounds like it.
Wait, comic guys like football? What the hell? Where have I been?
Andy, Parks, and Phil, both big football fans.
Really?
Yeah, and knowledgeable.
I thought you weren't allowed to like sports if you were a comic guy.
Well,
you said people aren't allowed.
Okay, yeah, that's my world.
And I've heard that Phil
don't those guys have a podcast that are in the crowd? They
yeah,
have
bad
a thing
at
called
sports.
Not
yes,
good fat sports.
Yes, some of the folks that dropped by, Duncan from Bad at Sports, yet another awesome Chicago podcast. So
just saying,
you're too kind.
It's associated. It's associated that if you're a comic guy, you don't do football. I'm just saying.
You know, Sal and Tom and I talked about this a lot. If we weren't doing Around Comics, we'd be doing Around Baseball.
Really?
Yeah, we would totally do a baseball podcast.
You want to try an episode right now?
Sure.
I have no opinion. No opinion.
Hey, Jenny, you know, we have an opinion about baseball. When there's a game on, bars are fun.
We like
the bars when baseball's going on.
My favorite thing about Wrigleyville is that they've got a game going on in the middle.
Which means more drunk people and more pizza.
Which is fantastic. Beer garden filled with people.
Exactly. And food
and
beer.
What? There's a game in the middle.
Whatever. I don't care.
Cup fans. All right.
I don't even know the difference between Cub and Sox fans, which really makes people pissed off.
My dad would say that the Cub fans are the ones that don't have tattoos.
Oh, okay.
But my dad's a Cub fan.
That's terrible. Gotcha.
But my, yeah, I don't know how I tell which one I am.
Well, but my wife is a Sox fan. She doesn't have a tattoo, so that's.
Huh.
So.
Well, we should get her. Go get her.
Go get her.
We'll tattoo her right now.
Honey, come on down. We have artists. They're ready.
To me, it just seems like both of them are just more likely to punch you in the head than other people. Scott, like Sox fans or Cubs fans, more likely to punch you in the head.
They're punching each other's heads for a while.
To punch you in the head.
Lately, they've been on the news punching each other.
In general, head punching, I'm just saying.
In general, you're more likely to get punched in the head.
Passionate fan base. All right, so we've got Hester Week and House of Mystery next.
I'll go next.
Go.
So I was going to talk about my very favorite comic, but you told me earlier that people will start turning off your podcast if I mention anything to do with Walking Dead, which has been amazing the last couple months.
You know, we need to do like a little supplemental podcast where we just talk about the 51st issue for like a half hour because it was
man.
So flipping awesome.
It was mind-blowing, but I'm not going to talk about that one.
Yeah.
So I would say right now sort of the one that I've been really enjoying lately, and it's a longtime favorite of mine, is Hellblazer. Yeah. And with Andy Diggle in it right now, he has taken this character who has been sort of languishing in his world for a long time, and a little bit of a pity, poor me thing and stuff, and then he's taken the guy and made him kind of a dick. Like, you know, John Constantine's back to, like, you know, he's not going to take any shit from anybody, and I thought that was just, it's been a real fun ride the whole way through.
Have you read the last two issues that Jason Aaron and Sean Murphy did?
Yeah. Which one was it? Those were the ones with the...
dog.
Elemental thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Wait, who's drawn that now?
Sean Murphy. Just
dude.
Just two issues, I think.
Sean Murphy's
looks
awesome.
So incredible.
They were
awesome. I love
like,
Sean
every
Murphy.
Every single page, I was like, oh my God.
Have any of perfect guy to draw that book? I wish he'd have been drawing it earlier.
Yeah.
Like, I don't enjoy how it was as much when it's drawn realistic, but when it's drawn like all crazy, like cool cartoon, that's
it awesome. A great job.
It has to be drawn like that, I think.
Oh, yeah,
it's
it
like,
needs to be great.
It is a quintessential classic horror comic. It's always been, and, you know, I mean, I've been following it since Garth Ennis first started working on it, and And I've always loved that comic, even when it didn't have the best teams on it. And
what issue? Like 200 what? It's...
Oh yeah, it's up there.
It's been running for 20 years.
I know, and I always worry every month if Vertigo they're ever going to cancel that comic. But it's got a
solid readership to it. And real quick, Sean Murphy, have any of you guys read Off Road?
Mm-hmm. No. That's great.
It is awesome.
It is a tremendous book.
Treasure your copy of it. It's out of print. I saw on Amazon. This sucker's going for like $80.
And I'm not sure this is true, but I had heard one of my friends said that Sean said he wasn't going to reprint it, or Oni wouldn't reprint it until they had some figure that they were sure would get sold, because they were worried it wouldn't get sold. Because he did it years ago.
Oh yeah.
It took a long time, but now all of a sudden it's a huge hit because he's a huge hit. And so cross your fingers, everyone write into Oni that they need to reprint that, because it is a phenomenal book.
I loved it. But maybe good news, bad news for you, Adam. You know that Diggle's not coming back to Hellblazer, right?
Oh,
this is the worst day of your life.
Have they discussed who's going to be coming back?
Yes, and I'm
Jason Aaron
real
doing it?
No. Simon Oliver.
Oh, the Exterminators. That could be kind of freaking cool, though.
I think Simon is going to have...
I loved Exterminators, and it's too bad that series ended. And he has the right attitude for it.
Well, have you been reading Hellblazer, Chaz, the Knowledge?
I haven't read that one yet, no.
It's really good. I think that... Well, first of all, Simon grew up in London or around one, and so he has a very obviously a British
aesthetic. Yeah.
Yeah, he knows how to do kind of a snarkiness,
right.
So he's got a good feel, and he obviously writes creepy fucking horror stuff, so I think Simon was a perfect pick to take it over.
You know what he reminded me most of actually is Preacher, when he was writing Exterminators. Mm-hmm. It just had a real feel of like this, sometimes it was a little over the top kind of gore, but I kind of like that. My dad raised me on zombie movies. I think that, but not just that, he's actually a really excellent writer too, so I think that would be a really good fit.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I'm excited. He'd been doing some Gen 13 stuff, which didn't feel like Simon Oliver's type of book.
He needs to be mature, yeah.
He needs to do something that has, bugs.
So,
exactly. And creepy, crawly stuff. So, All right, so Hellblazer. Mr. Kudelka?
Young Liars, David Lapham. I've been reading that lately. It's been something that's pretty twisted, and I've been pretty into it lately. Just the direction it's going. I don't know what's coming next basically when I read it. And I don't know if any of you guys have been reading it at all, or you've read some of it.
I admit a certain disappointment when the first issue. Actually.
I didn't open it, but the covers look cool.
It's on the fourth issue right now, and it's picked up a lot. The story's starting to get really interesting, and he's taking it in a just really crazy direction.
Tom loves it.
Yeah.
I loved Murder Me Dead, and I was a huge Stray Bolts fan, and for some reason, Young Liars did not.
It started really slow, but it picked up after you got to know the characters, because you had to introduce all these different weird
people. It's kind of like the loser rock band.
Pretty
dude,
much.
Right?
Yeah, it's people I knew when I hung out in the clubs and stuff.
Yeah.
Just really twisted,
I missed the boat, and by the time that Tom told me how much he loved it, and I heard from Ron at iFanboy how much he loved it, I was like, oh shit, I can't get the first issue. Okay, I'm going to wait for the trade. So I'm that guy.
You gotta wait for the trade.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the trade.
That guy's
on that
okay.
One.
I'm okay with that guy.
Okay,
it's a Vertigo title, right?
It's a Vertigo title, and
see, it's not like that. And that was what I was talking about before. I mean, it is awesome, and I really enjoy it. But it's also it's not in the realm of sort of the horror fantasy kind of sort of realm.
No, it's its own genre. It keeps it real, but it's still
is that a crime?
It's messed up.
Kinda, yeah.
Lapham is kind of a crime guy.
Yeah,
Lapham I run so hot and cold with. Finally started reading Stray Bullets. Found the first hardcover, and it is blow your mind.
Yeah,
good.
No, that was a huge inspiration.
The OGN that he did a couple years ago, Silverfish,
yeah.
It was all right.
Sure.
It kind of felt, TV movie of the week to me, where Stray Bullets is really a brilliant work.
Yeah, yeah.
And, the stuff he did, the Spectre story.
I was going to say Plasm, but that was just me.
which I thought that the Dr. 13 backups, and I think it was Tales of Suspense, or one. I forget exactly what it was, but he was doing a Spectre story. But the Dr. 13 backups that Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang were doing in the back, I thought were awesome in comparison. So Lapham you know, obviously has the chops. It just runs hot and cold with me.
You know, he's the one that actually made me start really taking black and white comics seriously when he first started on Straight
Was
Bullets.
It Ninja Turtles? Dude.
I missed the boat on that. When I started reading comics, it was like kind of, you know, X-Men around sort of the late Chris Claremont era, you know, and not until college when I picked up Straight Bullets towards the end of college, I believe, did I start realizing that there's this whole wealth of great stuff in black and white, and I became addicted to it, actually. I have a lot of favorites in the black and white genre that I almost think there should be more.
Really? It's just they don't sell?
Just Walking Dead, it's the only guy in the world.
Black and white.
It's too bad because it just adds
OGN. I'm talking about a monthly book. Oh. OGN is one thing, but I mean, obviously Scott Pilgrim is black and white. That's one thing, but
it's more grayscale, though. It's not black and white necessarily, like the old
black and white and gray. I mean,
I want my Zippitone back.
I would prefer black and white to bad coloring. I think good coloring you can't be.
So in a monthly fashion, you really can't do black and white. You can do it definitely in an OGN, which is great.
It depends on the genre.
Different audience, but
you could easily do a crime noir comic in black and white because that's what people are expecting.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like crime.
Straight Bullets sold for a long time.
Yeah, but different time, man.
Yeah, different time, dude. Yeah. Relative.
You look like right now, like for a crime, just a crime book. You know, great. You know, colored, glossy paper, heavy stock cover, blah blah blah. It's gonna top out at like 40,000 in sales, and I usually don't like talking about sales anymore because it just makes me angry.
It's
but
depressing.
It's like if something's in black and white, you can pretty much cut the sales in half on just about anything.
That's just too bad.
You know,
it's just, I mean, there's something about the black and white that like adds to the quality of the comic. Sometimes it depends on what the comic is, but
there's a little more control.
I can't imagine certain comics being in color.
Oh, can you imagine? Are you guys taking off?
Like the Goon, for example.
Yes. Listen to Bad at Sports.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Duncan.
I mean, I can't imagine...
Love and Rockets. Can you imagine Love and Rockets being in color?
Not at all. And even, like, when they went back to the Saga of the Swamp thing, you know, Alan Moore, and they reprinted them in black and white, and there was something eerie and cool about that at the time, too.
So I just picked up the Creepy Archives, and God, are those beautiful. But they're all black and white. You know, even whenever Marvel was doing their black and white magazine, like the Hulk, the Hulk magazine with all the Moon Knight backups, all that, you know, black and white and grayscale stuff was beautiful. So, you know, I wish more people would be open to reading black and white stuff because a lot of people will go, oh, it's black and white, I'm not going to waste my time with that.
There's a lot of amazing stuff out there.
It would save me some serious headache if people would read black and white.
Listeners.
It's the hardest thing to get on independent books. Is
go get black and white comic books.
If I could make Hackslash black and white, oh my God, my life would be so much easier.
There's still so much room to experiment, though. I mean, people could still use both black and white and color to tell a story. I mean, I know big numbers was one of those back in like 20 years ago, almost however long it was, when they wanted to do starting it from black and white and going slowly to color, and nobody's ever done experiments like that for.
That's because Alan Moore can do that. The rest of us are just not that cool. Well, nobody's gonna read it.
Well,
if I
and
do.
Then Promethea, he did like that. I mean, it was the color changed and the entire art style changed throughout the whole book, which is really interesting. There were certainly kinds of art in that book that I liked much, much less than others, but it was just the fact that it was an experiment that was really interesting and exciting.
There's still a lot of room, I think, to take the color in black and white. So back to David Lapham. I enjoy it a lot. I think he's going into David Lynch territory right now, doing really sort of surreal existential stuff with his storytelling. I mean, it's color, and it still looks good.
Oh, are you for, boo.
Are you for or against the David Lynch metamorphosis?
I am for it.
Okay.
Because I think it's going in some interesting territory. If they keep the series going for a while, I think it'll go somewhere really cool.
Right. Well, he got kind of burned at Valiant, right? Is that what was the deal was?
He got kind of
burned, and then he went and said, you know, screw it, I'm going to do my own thing for a long time.
That's the legend, anyway.
Yeah. And so, but Young Liars works in color. It definitely works. I'm just saying certain types of things that I enjoy seeing. So
I totally agree.
Cool. Well, my top of the stack.
Has a literal stack.
Dude, it was a ridiculous week. so much good stuff came out this week, and I've only read about half of it. So
I always like to make sure that Hackslash comes out in a week when only crap comes out, because then you have no competition. You're like, oh, hopefully yeah. only terrible things.
I don't
come
think
out
it could
week.
Be. I don't think it's allowed to be top of your top of the sack if you haven't read it yet.
No, I haven't read everything yet. Actually, what's silly about this is I read this a long time ago. We had Mike Mayhew on. I actually hadn't read it. I had seen some preview pages out of it, but you know, Mike is such a good visual storyteller that you could really, well, it's okay, first of all, it's X-Men Origins Jean Grey, and so first of all, if you are an old school X-Men fan, you kind of know Jean Grey's origin, and so it's pretty easy to follow the story. It's one that most folks know and can pick up on. But this is written by Sean McKeever, and it is fully painted by Mike Mayhew, and it is, we'll get to the paints in a second, they're absolutely gorgeous. But Sean's story is kind of just a retelling of Jean Grey's already kind of well-known origin story about, you know, her friend who gets hit by the car, and that's the first time that Jean's mutant powers manifest, and she actually is kind of inside her friend's mind when she dies, and uber traumatic, and then Xavier comes and kind of helps her through that, and then brings her to the school. But Sean is able to put kind of a nice updated spin on that, expands the story a little bit, takes it past the time that she goes to Westchester, becomes an X-Men, and then there's another kind of story that ties things together. The voice in it's very solid. Sean's dialogue is always very good. He writes teens and teen stories exceptionally well.
He's a teenage girl at heart, that's why.
He is a teenage girl at heart.
I know Tom Keever. He's a little girl.
He wrote this well. Love I me. Mean, he's been exclusive at DC for a year and a half now. So he wrote this before he went over to DC. But Mike's art in this is blow your mind good. It is
very crisp, very clean.
It is so beautiful. And there was a comment on our forum this week that his teenage Jean Grey looks like a teenager.
Isn't that a real girl that he did a photograph?
Exactly. Yeah. Whenever we were talking to him a couple weeks ago, so they actually got two models, a 12 and 16 year old gals that looked like they could kind of be sisters, and because he needed to do a 12 year old Jean Grey and then a 16 year old, and so he's very cognizant of the fact that teenagers should look like teenagers, and I don't think that everyone in comics
that's
necessarily
problem.
Does that.
That's definitely a problem, especially when they don't stay teenagers. Like, that's nice, then they look age appropriate, but when one character throughout a book shifts from like 29 to 4.5,
yeah,
and they're also,
well, it's hard
16.
To keep them teenagers when you're, you know, traits and porn stars or something.
You know, exactly.
Tough gig.
I mean, you look at these pages and
these 4.5 age porn stars.
You know, these are 13 year old girls,
yeah,
that are on this page, and they look 13, and that's how it should be. And then she does age throughout the story, but it was for old school X-Men fans that want to read another great take on Jean Grey's origin. This is totally fulfilling. For people that have never read Jean Grey's origin, this is a great book. And if you love beautiful painted comic books, you can't go
sort
wrong.
It's sort of hypothetically painted, right? I think it's done in tones and then digitally enhanced.
I don't know exactly what his process was.
Hypothetically painted.
Hypothetically.
What would you say? Hypothetically.
No, exactly.
No, because
I've seen a lot of his originals. They're usually like toned pencils, and then maybe someone goes over and digitally sort of.
No, I went to his site, and he's got painted pages.
It looks like watercolor.
Yeah, but yeah. even if it isn't,
I'm not
real
saying
watercolor.
That digital is not painted. It's painted. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I think this
seems like it was digital. There was pencil tones.
I think it was brush and water and all that stuff, because he has the painted pages up on his site.
It looks all watercolor or acrylic.
There's one. There's a page in there that I would love to. If you flip through, it's the one where Marvel, it's the full page with the missile being shot at her. I would love to buy that page, but it would probably get me divorced if my wife ever found out, and B, bankrupt me, because I have a
I have a whole collection of girls being shot at with missiles if you want to come to my house.
Okay.
Check out my gallery.
Are those
gallery.
Two mutually exclusive? Would you get a divorce because of how expensive it would be, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. That seems fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Does your wife just hate Jean Grey?
Yeah.
Jean Grey.
That redheaded bitch.
How dare she come back over and over again? So, no, that's
no more Famke Janssen for you, Chris.
You know, it's amazing how long she's been dead for. Actually, Jean Grey's been gone.
How long has she been off the map?
It's been a long. It's been more than 5 years, I think.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Didn't Claremont wipe? No, Morrison wiped her butt out, didn't he?
No.
No, Claremont did. And
no,
then Morrison.
Didn't Morrison kill her again?
No, I think it was Claremont. Remember he was doing that space plot line where they were in space and she saved Wolverine, right?
Yeah.
And that's when she died.
I was thinking about that today. That has been a while
it's
ago.
It's been a long time. I was surprised that they kept her gone for that.
Well,
they
got Ultimate and First Class, and so she's not really gone.
Yeah, I miss she's Jean Grey, but then again, I'm kind of glad that she's...
I can't stand what's her face.
Emma? Got some Emma problems?
I dislike Emma.
Dude.
I mean, I like her. She's a great villain, but I just don't believe her in that role.
I was reading Secret Invasion, and they had like all of the like 80s versions of the characters are in Secret Invasion down in the Savage Land, and it was the 1980s Emma Frost in the old Hellfire Club costume. She pops out and says, like, "I'm Emma Frost of the Hellfire Club." I was like, "Shoot that scroll, bitch!"
Exactly. You're like, "Girl must get really cold in that thing."
Well, speaking of Secret Invasion or Final Crisis, anybody here keeping up with the events of the day?
No.
I have a hard time with those long crossover.
After 52 and...
Yeah, I burned out on it, and I just can't read them anymore.
If I hear it's good, I'll wait till a trade. I'm one of those
guys.
Yeah,
you're one of those guys. Nice. I'm kind of, keeping my toe into Secret Invasion here and there. But Final Crisis has been very good, mostly because I'm reading Seven Soldiers of Victory at the same time, which there's a lot of Seven Soldiers.
The old Grant Morrison thing that he did. Okay.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm like six issues away. I'm almost done with the third trade, and it is a... especially with Morrison, you can throw around the word brilliant, but it's really a brilliant work. It is so good that he took seven miniseries, four issues each, that all came out. They didn't come out concurrently, did they?
No, some of them did, but they all filtered through one another.
And so you've got storylines that go from one to the other, and characters that pop up in different...
It was an interesting experiment, and it was cool that he tried something like that,
And in trade, it reads awesome.
That's the problem that I kind of have. Like, Grant Morrison's brilliant. He's a great writer, and he's actually capable of doing stuff like that. But it requires the readers to go buy the trade in order to be able to follow what exactly is going on. I mean, I've had a number of friends of mine who stopped reading certain series because they're like, I don't know what to read next or when to read what. I'm just going to go pick up, like, the Ultimate versions of the comics or whatever. So,
well, he still tries to put out self-contained work that a lot of other writers do. Like, We Three is really good.
We Three is amazing.
Kill Your Boyfriend.
Bello's awesome.
Best comic ever.
Which one?
Yeah, that was
Kill Your Boyfriend is my favorite Grant Morrison.
What's the thing with Seven Soldiers? I think that walks a line on it, where it's bad on both sides, I think, in that it's a book that stared me in the face for a long time. It's like, okay, it's Morrison. I know it's probably going to be very good. Except for Zatanna, I really didn't know who any of the characters were. So
Mr. Miracle?
Well, not that Mr. Miracle.
Oh, yeah.
I know Scott Free Mr. Miracle, but not that one. And so it was, and even then, if it was, Kirby's, Scott Free, I would be like, it just wasn't enough to say, okay, pull the trigger and buy this first of four trades. But it's also a perfect place to jump in because you don't really have to know a whole lot about DC continuity. It helps, but it's so fucking off the wall anyway. You don't have to know the continuity. So I don't know, where is the balance? Where is the balance of having something that anyone can walk in off the street and pick something off the shelves and feel like it's totally accessible, or also
something so intricately inside of the universe. I think it's best when you can find something that does both. Like, there are really rare exceptions that can kind of weave themselves.
Well, why wasn't it hard when I was a kid? I mean, I'd pick up stuff and I didn't know anything about it. And I didn't have any problem.
Well, yeah, I think that is...
Maybe it's just because my brain was better?
I'm serious. I think it might have been worse because you were accepting. You know, like, you picked up a comic and you're like, I'm going to enjoy this.
Well,
when you're an adult and you pick up a comic, a lot of people are like, well, we'll just see about this, you know?
Well, there are so many more series out there than there were when we were growing up as kids, I think.
But realistically, though, I mean, I picked up the X-Men stuff when Claremont was on it, and, you know, he's referencing things from 15 years ago, and that just made me want to check it out. It didn't scare me away.
But he just did it right.
He did it well.
Fall of the Mutants, for example, you could follow Uncanny X-Men and not follow any of the rest and still get a great story. And that might be the case now, but now it's not just one series. Like, I remember Civil War touched just about every single comic in the Marvel Universe, and you're just like, oh my god, like, I'm worn out. You know, White Flag, give me a break.
I don't know. Hey, now what intrigues you to pick up a book that you're not currently getting, whether it's on issue 12 or issue 1 or issue, you know, 200 in the case of Hellblazer, which I'm probably going to start reading for the first time in my life. What is it that gets you to try out a book?
If I haven't been told, then it's good. And if there isn't an artist, more likely for me an artist, but sometimes a writer, then I've known in the past to like always the cover. I know that that's a faux pas.
Really? No,
always
that's not a
cover.
Faux pas. It's
and
not supposed
that's
to work.
Probably why I'm a cover artist, because I'm like, well, that for me is that's the selling point. Like,
that's
I'll
how
pick
it's
up something
supposed
I've never
to work.
Seen
yeah.
before.
So that's well, yeah, they you're doing it
and
the right way.
And that's why I picked up House of Mystery. I was like, these flies on the eyeball, this is pretty freaking sweet.
I was crying in the corner. I'm so afraid of it.
But yeah, always.
Okay,
cover.
So cover. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess after a while, you almost, me, I kind of get desensitized to covers.
Yeah,
I don't.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
you're
I think
just like it's the same cover over and over.
A really outstanding cover, and you can tell really outstanding artists or people that do something different. You can tell.
Like we do
just
on
sitting,
Hackslash, right, Jenny?
That's right. I have a cover. It's right over there on top.
Yeah, right. The Burnham Bell.
But I think you can still tell outstanding artwork, even if it's similar to something else you've seen. Like, if it's if it is spot on, you know.
Yeah.
From
innovative.
A mile away. Like, if I see a good cover, I can tell, even surrounded by covers, even when I'm oversensitized to how much is going on around me.
Sure.
A lot of the simpler covers stand out a lot of times because there's so much going on in a lot of
the other ones.
Sure. White, I think white is the most obvious thing on
you know
the
sucks,
white
though?
Album is the most obvious.
But I started doing like white covers, and then half the ones you get are dirty because they go like through the printer thing, you know? So like, you're like, oh, white cover stands out.
Cream,
oh, it looks like I wiped my butt with it.
Oh, that's awful. Cream-colored comic book
art. Well, like for me, in terms of covers, you know, I've seen so many covers that they're kind of irrelevant to me, but it takes a sophisticated cover to grab my attention. For example, Nightly News had amazing graphic design on their covers, and that was something that I picked up because of the cover, and I rarely do that.
Well,
usually
you're hitting
the
area where I was going to go to, too, which is graphic design.
It's
instead of just having the title on the top, you're trying to do something a little bit more twisted with the title and moving it around.
Like Fables.
Right. Fables does it a lot.
Sure.
But generally, like, it's bad to do that because the way that
they're stacked.
The way the books are stacked.
right.
Generally, a bad thing to do because the way they're stacked, you would just be cutting off the logo.
The Wildcats 3.0, I always remember those covers as being very innovative. I think you see that now. I don't know if anybody does more innovative and interesting covers than Fables and 100 Bullets.
Oh, sure.
100 Bullets.
Hackslash did a lot of interviews.
And Hackslash.
I liked what's his face who did he did Hellblazer for a long time. The covers of the Hellblazer.
Glenn
Fabry.
I pronounce his name wrong.
Yeah,
I probably
for years. I mean,
well, it's the Preacher. artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the Preacher artist.
Cover artist.
Well, he was also Hellblazer before Preacher, and then and then did Preacher, and then did a bunch of Hellblazer afterwards as well. So.
I love Brian Boland. I'm going to throw that out there.
Oh, one too.
He's the guy.
Brian Boland, if you were out there, I love you. You're inside of this microphone right now.
Doing some really nice design.
Ben Templeton?
When he gets to design his stuff, he does some really nice. I was just looking at that Wormwood Calamari Rising trade right there, and it's like, that's really a neat, very standout cover compared to all those sort of hyper-rendered.
Sure, I mean, there are all, you know, a lot of the standard guys that get mentioned. James Jean, you know, obviously. Alex Ross is a guy that's really kind of made his bread and butter on covers.
Dave McKean, who just, he ushered in the world of graphic design for comic books, really. He really did. I mean, he is a graphic designer first and foremost, and an artist the second, you know, comic artist the second, so.
Adam Hughes.
Sure. Oh, gosh, yeah. Is Brian Wood, does he design the covers
for
DMZ?
Yeah.
Okay, because he's
those are amazing.
He's a
right
graphic designer.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. He's a graphic designer, and a very, very accomplished graphic designer, and those are one of the, you know, heavy design covers that
very
are out there.
Design on those, yeah. I love those.
It's been really amazing to see how the cover has evolved over the years.
The same guy who did Nightly News, was he the same guy who did Filth?
Hickman? No,
Chris Weston. That had really great design.
Chris Weston, I think.
I just remember, just from the first time I saw Nightly News, I knew nothing about it, and I saw the graphic design on that cover of that comic, and I'm like, oh my god, this is absolutely stunning. And I picked it up.
And it's good.
And it's really good.
It's good on the inside, too.
So.
Santa looks like the inside.
Yeah,
which is,
it does.
Which
it
is,
does.
Isn't that the biggest bummer sometimes?
That is. Yeah, that's a huge disappointment. Or even if it's like, you have this beautiful cover, but then you have a really bad artist, or you really have somebody who just can't
measure up to it. Or it's just so completely different.
Totally different, and you're like, it's not even similar.
Well, that's, you know, in Preacher, if you weren't expecting Steve Dillon to look at those, you know, beautiful, you know, painted favorite covers and then open that up to Steve Dillon, that's a 180 from, from his style. Well, Tim, you know, you let's mention Hack Slash again. You work on a series, you write a series that I'm sure that you're very involved in who does the art, both interior and exterior. Whenever, are you involved in finding cover artists? Do you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I draw half of them, and then I pick the other. But
they can't hear you raise your hand, Jenny.
I raised my hand.
Jenny did a very nice cover for the Hack Slash 14, which just came out, which was the Wizard of Oz theme one. But, I mean, you know, the reality of it is I know readers, and as a reader myself, you have that sort of thing where you're like, well, this isn't the artist on the inside. Well, so that's not my job to deliver the artist on the inside.
My job is
to get you to pick the book up.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't been that way for a really long time.
I've heard a lot of people make that argument, but I kind of think that there's a different point. There is a total different point between
a cover artist and a narrative
and
artist. Yeah.
Pinup art. Like,
definitely. And there's artists that are awesome cover artists that are terrible interior artists. Yeah, so I mean, it's, and you know, and you're trying to juggle a variety of things, which include, you know, people's schedules and all these things. And there's a definite reason
David Mack. I love David Mack's covers.
Oh,
and
God,
there's been enough discussion on the intranets and all that not the best sequential storyteller. Fantastic artist.
I think he's a great and sequential artist.
It depends on what it is.
It depends on what it is. When he did some of the Daredevil stuff or whatever, I thought like, it was so, but the story was like this, you know, I remember the story with the girl really mentally, you know, just out there, and his art really matched that sort of psychosis.
Or the one with the little kid that was like trapped inside himself and couldn't tell what had happened to his father. Like, that artwork, it did match a kid who can't communicate.
But you're not
going to
throw him in The Walking Dead and have him tell a convincing zombie story.
No, and one of the things he does is at least for the one story that I'm talking about, he treats the page like it is a cover. I mean, like, it is one illustration. And not that all artists don't do that, but he does it almost like each page is one painting, and he's kind of trying to lead your eye around it and And it's just a little bit different than a regular narrative story.
Now, whenever you guys are working on a cover, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to tell what the story is about, on what's on the inside? Are you trying to get, ultimately, shelf appeal?
I'm just trying to get by.
Well, many times you guys don't necessarily know what the story is going to be because you guys get it started on the cover pretty quickly.
You know the basic idea. I mean, I've never done a cover where I had a script in hand.
Right.
I always had somebody said, hey, here's what it's going to be. And with Hackslash, I know when Jenny and I were working on it, I didn't write the script yet. So it was like, hey, it's going to be sort of like a Wizard Oz thing.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was.
Right.
In fact, I had never even read Hackslash.
Yeah,
sorry,
which,
Tim.
Whatever, fuck
I read
off,
it constantly now, all the time.
Yeah.
By all your issues.
But and that leads into the story about the first time, the first time I went looking for Hackslash was at my hometown comic book store, and they didn't have it.
Yeah, tell that story to Burn and Die. So, No, but I mean, I think part of your job is mostly just to, you know, create a compelling image and not necessarily to reflect the exact contents of the book. It's not, I mean, if you know,
I think it must go
compete with Marvel and DC.
Not always that way. For specific reference, Brian Boland, when he was on Wonder Woman, always seemed to do an exact representation of one of the pages of the book,
sure,
but way better.
Well, yeah.
So I thought he must get the entire book, or he sends in the cover and they show the artist the cover, and he's like, "I'm drawing that."
I'm doing that too.
Well, you get the impression. I mean, obviously, in the past, things were done slightly differently too, where they actually did have scripts before they did the covers, which in today's market is not always true.
Oh, sure.
Especially in the indie market.
Well, a lot of it's because you have to solicit it so far.
Solicitations are so far in advance.
Yeah.
So usually you don't, but...
Loved his Animal Man covers, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My CBG thing, I got to pick my 10 favorite covers in CBG this week. I got to pick my Animal Man was in there. It was one of my favorites.
Mike Norton's drinking the animal paper bag.
Well, do your show.
You are the classiest man.
He's got a 40 and a brown paper.
No, I'm not.
24,
I'm
thank
back.
You.
44, sorry.
It's probably a spark, so Mike's going to be hyper and drunk later.
It's
and
not, it's a Miller Lite.
Norton looks like he's going to roll me for some change in a minute.
I would say... I would say going back to what you said, you were asking what it takes for you to go to a comic that you wouldn't have picked up before. 9 times out of 10 these days, back in the day, it used to be about the art for me, when I was younger. Nowadays, it has to do with two things. One, the writing. Writing is absolutely the most important thing to me nowadays. And then number two, it's, it can be buzz, like if there's something unique or a twist. But the art is important to me, but I think the writing is very important, especially...
Well, then, if the writing is important, how do you...
It's reviews, right? I mean, everybody kind of runs by internet reviews these days.
Well, but you said in addition the buzz, so if it's just the part about the writing, is it generally a writer, an author that you already know?
Sometimes, but many times it's also a writer that might get a lot of positive buzz online, but that
or your local comic
unique spin. Yeah, or the local comic shop. My local
or
comic shop will drop
podcast.
Stuff in. Or a podcast. Okay. Actually, around comics, you introduced me to Queen Country, which I thought was absolutely amazing. So, I mean, I really enjoyed that one. But yeah, it's those other venues. The art is still very important to me. I mean, there's certain things like I don't know what you guys think as artists, but like Ex Machina, I think is actually beautiful on the inside.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Talk about graphic design.
Looking at the graphics and stuff. But
someone at the table is not a fan.
Yeah,
but we're not gonna say who it was.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why some artists wouldn't like it that much because of how it's
stiff. It's all
magazine cover. Kind of in a way, you know what I mean?
We were talking about this the other week. He's Tony Harris is working on the book with Mark Miller, The War Heroes, and it was kind of hard for me to read that book because I accept Harris's art in Ex Machina, but it's hard for me to accept it in another book. I don't know why. It just kind of
didn't flow for you when you read it.
Yeah,
that's how I felt with it.
It was just kind of.
I can see that. I mean, good art coupled with a great story
definitely, you know, a home run. But, you know, if it's a great writer who, you know, has their own indie comic and they're scratching out their kind of poor drawings and stuff, but it's still really good.
Torso.
I will.
Bendis on Torso,
will,
sure.
Yeah, I love that comic, right? Like,
Chris Burnham on anything.
Burnham.
Yeah. Just one rip of Chris Burnham.
Oh, yes, for the Burnham Bell. So. Well, Andrew, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about what you do, because we did our video game episode way back when, and Adam and Mike Kennedy sat in with us. I don't know if we even talked to you on that episode.
I'm not sure.
But he was out in the corner, not really.
Reading comics.
And just kind of hanging out. Talking to people.
Yeah, just sitting down on my little pile.
But one of
your little ponies?
Yeah, my little pony, yeah.
First of all, I mean, you do have a history in comics, and then you did some comics back in the 90s, didn't you?
Yeah, I did some stuff, some independent stuff, okay. And then I did a showcase for DC back in the 90s. It was just like an 8-pager. Okay. I did. Kevin Nolan inked it. That was cool.
Hey, there you go.
I love Kevin Nolan. We talked about this last time.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. He inked me once. I covered for the Hero Initiative.
That sounds dirty.
It's the best thing I've ever
Everything
seen.
Everything here sounds dirty.
Well, what was it that got you into the video game?
The industry, when I started getting into graphic design, I started doing some stuff with cabinet art back when they were still doing cabinets back at Midway. Met a lot of people there, and they were doing MK at the time. Actually, I hung out with a lot of the guys.
Is MK Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, sorry, Mortal Kombat.
Industry speak.
Yeah. But you must know something, because you came up with that.
I thought it was Monkey Knights.
Oh.
Monkey Knights.
We're working on
Monkey Knights.
Pitch that to the Midway people.
So yeah, just a lot of the people were in the industry when I was doing comics and stuff, just hanging out with them, and they were doing comics occasionally too.
Yeah, because it seems like there's a lot of cross-pollination.
Right.
Who's the guy that's doing it's the Brian Reed book at Image right now. Oh gosh, help me out here.
What's it about?
It's an espionage book.
Phil.
No.
They're poops.
No, I can't remember.
Is this come back to the video game?
This is the
artist is a.
By Infinite Horizon?
No.
Oh, Brian Reed. I don't know.
Yeah, Brian Reed. Here, hold on.
Yeah, Brian Reed. I'm not.
Hey, Mark. What's the book that Brian Reed is doing at Image? The espionage book. Hey, Centris, what's the book that Brian Reed's doing at Image, the espionage book?
Brian Reed espionage. Oh, The Order. The Circle.
There you go. Okay. The Circle.
Circle.
Very complicated name. No wonder I couldn't remember it. But are you doing like concept art or?
Well, at Midway right now, there has been a crossover. I'm going to start doing some concept work possibly. There's a lot of shifting going on at Midway because of. The company's changing fast.
Okay.
There's a few people that have left, and then they've laid off about 80 people in Austin.
Oh.
So there's a lot of shifting going around. The group that I'm in is called Central, and we're kind of the fixers and betweeners who they come to us when they're behind, and they use our resources. So there's going to be a lot of crossover going on. I mean, my history is in a lot of concepting.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started getting into character, texturing, and modeling, and then environment modeling, and that's what I do basically now at Midway.
Okay.
Is a lot of 3D stuff, but I have a background in concepting, so it all kind of crosses over. And a lot of people in the industry now, they're starting to get more open about what they do. They're not exclusively getting involved in just one field. They want to get involved in more than one, just a little bit of programming, a little bit of... It's getting to a point where you got to juggle a lot of hats sometimes.
Okay.
Because there's occasionally we'll have downtime, and they just don't want people sitting idly.
Oh, sure.
Because that's a lot of... Especially now, there's a lot of lost money, a lot of money to be spent. So I'm wearing a lot of hats, basically.
You're
I have
tired.
A book like that. I think it's called Hats for Sale.
Hats for Sale.
That's not a joke.
Really?
It was my favorite books when I was little.
Nice. Okay.
Books for Sale. Or
Hats for Sale. Well, you have a fantastic sketchbook that you dropped by. You had it at Wizard World Chicago.
Yeah.
Anywhere that people can check out your art online? I see.
What do I have now? All I have right now, I'm working on a website. It'll be amkadelka.com. There's a MySpace. You can probably find it. It's just, you know, the MySpace and /
A-M. K-U-D-E-L-K-A.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. You would drop by a The Art of Midway Games book.
Yeah, that was about a couple months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to see some absolutely breathtaking art, this Art of Midway Games is ridiculous. I was it's one of those books that I left on the coffee table and would stare at for just like hours.
Vincent Prost is a comic guy too, mm-hmm. to begin with, and he's doing a lot of the concepting there at Midway. And the stuff that they've done for MK versus DC, or Mortal Kombat versus Detective Comics. Basically.
No, I know what that means.
He's great, and he's done a lot of stuff with video game computer design. I mean, he can sit there and draw something straight on. He's working with Wizards of the Coast right now, actually, on a couple projects. But he can do stuff straight on the computer or just hand draw it. So, I mean, it's getting to that point where a lot of people are doing both, and I think that's pretty cool.
Different hats.
Different hats.
Hats for sale.
Different pants.
Hats for sale.
Different hats, different pants.
Speaking of video games and artists and some sad news I saw today, when we did do our video game episode, Mike Kennedy was sitting in with us, and he did a book with Carlos Meglia called Superman.
Yeah, that was some great art, yeah.
Carlos Meglia died today.
No
today?
Kidding.
Yeah, he passed away today. Yeah. He's 50 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, I was...
The comic artists work too hard, man. They die like...
Well, they don't see the sun, ever.
Yeah. No, it's just a weird, sad trend.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But
it's been going on lately. Yeah. I mean, we had, you know, Michael Turner.
Too much working.
Well, not Mark Turner, obviously, had disease. Yeah. But
Jack Kamen, but Jack was, he was not young.
Ringo. So. And then who was the artist that, I loved his work, but he was in Japan when he passed
away. Oh, Seth Fisher.
Yeah.
Seth Fisher was great.
A rough couple years, man.
Yeah,
but
two crazy schedules, crazy, too much.
We're all getting old.
Crazy people.
Yeah.
No,
they're
one
all
does
young.
This.
They're all young.
No
people.
One does this when they're saying.
I'm trying to come up with some reason.
But it was
bad
long.
Scheduling.
Yeah, that was some crappy news before I came out here, and then I was like,
I actually was unfamiliar with his work, which surprised me. But when people send the news around, I was like, I don't know who that is.
Very animated.
Very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, the sort of progenitor of the sort of, you know, Rama school of art. Obviously, he created that.
Absolutely.
Way ahead of the time. So
absolutely.
Really good stuff.
Well, got a couple things I want to bring up here before we wrap up. First of all, longtime friend of the show and just all around awesome guy, Andy Parks, is blogging now. He has a daily
blogging.
He has joined the Blogger Nation. He has a daily blog. It's at andyparks.blogspot.com. And for those that don't know, Andy spells his name A-N-D-E, not A-N-D-Y, so it's A-N-D-E-P-A-R-K-S.
Ende
Parks. Andy has an awesome blog. Every day he scans a panel of original art that he owns, most of them, and just kind of like talks about that artist and kind of what it means to him. And, you know, Andy is obviously a very accomplished inker. He talks about a lot of the inking techniques and just, you know, goes in depth into these artists and the techniques that they use, and, you know, is also able to keep people up to date on what he's working on. So check out andyparks.blogspot.com and leave comments there. Hillary Barda and Jason Millay are currently have an issue of Munden's Bar available for old Grimjack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Grimjack fans should know that. You can go to comicmix.com, and it's issue number 6 of Munden's Bar. It's extremely funny, and if you love Hillary's art style, it's gorgeous, easy.
He colored it. I like Jason's
pencil. John Ostrander and Hillary, I believe, did the story. Hillary drew it, inked it, and Jason, who I just saw walk into the shop, Jason colored it, and it's beautiful.
He's a little redhead over there.
Yeah. And as I understand, Munden's Bar is another one of those rare venues that can have changing artists for the same...
Because then Dr. Burnham...
Well, not even... Did he Dr. Burnham?
Dr. Burnham.
It was one, back in the 90s, that was one of my first trials to get in the first.
A Munden's Bar?
Anina Bennett was the editor back then, and she got me to do something, and I think I still have that somewhere.
Nice. That's Comic Mix is
Mike Gold,
who ran First Comics here out of
all
Chicago.
Related.
Yeah,
circular, like
carousel. Cyclical, as I like to say. So anyway, go check out comicmix.com. They have some great. I love the. Maybe we'll talk about this next episode. Their model is that they're putting out content on the web, and then they're going to go to trade. So go and fall in love with it online, and then buy the trade whenever it comes out. out. So, Freak Angels is another one.
That's really cool. I've been reading that too.
And they just announced that the trade will be out November-ish, I believe, in time for the holidays. So everyone that has or hasn't been reading Warren Ellis's Freak Angels is going to be able to buy that in trade now. I think it's a great model that I think you're going to see more and more people go to. Speaking of promotion, I got in the mail the Stumptown mini comic. Let me rustle around and find this.
Here's the sound effects for rustling.
Russell.
Hey, Russell.
You used to know a guy named Russell.
Would he wrestle?
Oh. Smoked a lot of pot.
But he was all muscle.
Rhyme.
And he would eat muscles.
I'll put a picture of this up on the forum, but this is the Stumptown promotional comic that went out. This is Greg Rucka and Matt Southworth's new comic coming out from Oni. It came in a little envelope marked confidential, and the comic is what, about 2 inches by, what is that, 3.5 inches or so?
Size of business card.
Yeah, it's business card size, and came with a magnifying glass. But
that's,
if you guys want to take
awesome.
A look at that.
Is it black and white?
Yes.
Wow. There you go.
There's
a black and white
awesome.
Comic book.
Well, this is going to be a trade, I imagine, right? Or is it going to be a monthly?
That is going to be...
It's
going to
be a tiny trade that you can't open because it's so fast.
But if you throw it, you can really hurt somebody. This
is
amazing.
It's going to be a monthly private investigator comic from Oni.
This looks great. And you can read it at this size.
Yeah, isn't
Dude,
that awesome?
3x5 comics are the way of the future.
It's like a deck of cards.
that's a great promo piece. That'll be coming out from Oni later on this year, I believe. And I know that Greg is really excited.
Did you want to do a little tiny ass comic?
Did you call it a little tiny ass comic or a little tiny ass comic?
That's a little tiny ass comic.
Is that a comic?
We're
going to
do
about
a tiny little ass comic.
Do a tiny ass comic.
So Hack Slash number 14 is on shelves now. Jenny Frizen cover, Tim Seeley written goodness.
And Stone drawn interiors.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. And you can check out the Hack Slash Omnibuy. Are you calling it Archive Omnibuy?
It's called an Omnibus.
An Omnibus. So you can check that out right now. The last few things. Check out Tom versus the JLA. Comes out almost daily, even though I think he's wrapping up or just wrapped up and going to be starting The Flash, starting with Showcase number 4 whenever he gets back on that. I'm on 11 o'clock comics every Thursday or Friday whenever Vince B gets his lazy ass to edit it and put it out. So I'm usually much more inebriated and opinionated on that. So check out 11 o'clock comics.
More inebriated.
Dude, I've noticed that because I started listening to 11 o'clock comics and you're a little slower, a little slurrier.
Angrier.
And a little bit like a little bunch of fish in the face.
Oh no, I'm like, don't want to be on that show.
I'm like, Chris is drunk. This is nice.
And angry.
Drunk and angry. Those are the best combinations. I was
a fucking rainbow this last week, so I'm toning it down. You can also check out my column Comics Shots every Thursday at ifanboy.com, where I give you a drink and a comic book recommendation. Speaking of Greg Greca, this last week was a Vesper Martini, which is the original James Bond Martini, and Queen and Country was my comic recommendation. So each week a new drink and a new comic. Check that out at ifanboy.
Lillet Blanc.
That's Lillet Blanc.
Yeah.
And my French is.
Just get like at Benny's or something.
You have to go to Benny's. I went to two other liquor stores, and they're like, what?
Where'd you go, Arkansas? You mean it's not Bud? We had Bud and Bud Light.
They didn't have it at Cardinal Liquor across the street. All right. That should wrap that up. I want to thank everyone for being here.
We want to thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you won't be saying that. You won't be saying that after the next episode. All right. Everyone, thanks a lot. Thank you for listening. We will be back next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime...
In between time.
Good, Adam. We'll be everywhere in and around comics.
I think that one up all my own.
I listen to this show so much.
expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.